It's time now for Memories of the Past, brought to you this afternoon by the Van Zantwick Memorial Chapel. Your host this afternoon is Doug Chapkis.
Just again, and happy to have John Van Scullin back. Welcome back, John.
Nice to be back, Doug.
Did you have a good time?
Had a real good time.
My goodness gracious, it's been a long time. I've been gone, too.
You've been gone on my Saturday morning program, too. Yeah, I had to do that with a variety of people. Yeah.
But I'm all finished with that project now, and you're back again.
That's right.
I'm really glad to have you back.
Well, I'm glad to be back.
Did you get some good sunshine?
I had a lot of it.
Did you?
Yes. The weather was beautiful. They had a snowstorm down there, though.
Uh-oh.
It started to rain one day, and of course, they need rain down there. It's terribly dry. And before the day was over, it got cold, and we were. Well, very comfortable in our apartment. And by afternoon, I said to my wife, look, it's starting to snow. And by night, they had snow on the ground. It stayed on the ground. In the morning, there was, on some of the cars that were parked in the right spot, there was as much as 4 inches of snow on top.
Really?
But by 10 o'clock, it was gone.
Yeah, I bet they don't know how to handle snow too well.
It's gone.
Does it get slippery?
No, they don't have to do anything. It's just gone.
Yeah.
I had to scrape it off from the car. I had my brother-in-law's car.
Oh.
And of course, I didn't know whether there was a snow scraper in it or not, but there was another man in the apartment complex there who was from Ypsilanti. And he had driven down. See, I didn't drive down.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, I got a scraper. So he had one of those scrapers and squeegee. And a few minutes, it was all gone off.
One year when you drove, wasn't it a snowstorm?
I got in a snowstorm on the way back.
Or was it a snowstorm?
No, yeah, that was on the way
back. I remember that when you told about that. You had a bad one, didn't you?
I'll never forget that one,
I think that's when you decided to fly from then on.
That's when I decided that we'll fly, Flying is the nice.
Did you make good connections flying this time?
Real good. Yeah.
Did you?
Nice flight.
The
nice
only
weather.
Problem I have, once in a while you get those schedules mixed up.
Well, you get into O'Hara Field, and if you're late or can't find your way around, why you're in trouble.
You can really get into problems.
Worked out real good.
Well, that's good. Well, I suppose we should talk about memories of the past.
I imagine that's what we're up here for. Yeah.
When we were talking, you and I were talking for a second ahead of time about this. Fishing along the river and stuff there, but you know, do you think that I bet people from yesteryear, if they could see our fishing now, our sport fishing now, I don't think they'd even believe it.
They wouldn't believe it. I couldn't help but think. I don't know. Sometimes I get to dreaming about things that have happened and things that I have done in years past, and I got to thinking of, how in the world I ever got to thinking of Al Enoy. No, I don't think there's many people around that would remember Al Enoy, but he lived down on Harbor Avenue, across from what used to be the barn, across from what's now the Laudit Foundation property, the Laudit Park. There was a house that, hadn't been torn down too many years, but it was up quite a few steps and was up there overlooking the harbor and the river. And, of course, this was before the barn was there. Now, you don't remember the barn, and a good many people that are listening to us now don't remember the barn. But the barn was a dance hall, but I'll get into that. We're trying to explain these things. I guess we get into a lot of things.
Well, that's okay.
But Al Enoy was the boss at the freight house down here.
Where was that?
The freight house was on the foot of Washington Street where the stadium is.
I see.
Boats used to come in there, and they would haul the freight, grain, and, whatnot. But there was a lot of grain shipped back and forth. And when the boats came in, the men used to go down there and work hauling the stuff off the boat. And they hauled it off with a baggage truck, these little steel-wheeled trucks. They were heavier than lead, and they'd pile, I don't know how many bags of grain on it, and they had to go up the gangplank, and what they'd do is get two fellows behind it, and one fellow pulling it, and they'd push that up there, and then they would load it into the freight cars, off the boat in the freight car, or off the freight car into the boat, whichever way it happened to be going.
Boy, heavy but, work,
yeah,
huh, John?
It was heavy work. And Al Enoy was the boss. And, well, there were all kinds of people worked down there. The hobos that wanted a little job for a few hours would work there, and some of our citizens worked there. Some of our citizens, that was their living.
Uh-huh.
I know, I think they got 25 cents an hour.
Well, it wasn't year-round work, though.
No,
was it
wasn't year-round work. It just came in when it was work when the boats were in.
Mm-hmm.
But Al was a boss, and he was a boss too.
Was he?
Yeah, he was a hard boss. He'd be hollering at those fellows. We used to go down there as a kid to listen to him, and sometimes he wasn't very choice with his language when he get after those kids. But Al, he was a hard boss, but he was a kind of a nice guy. I liked him.
Mm-hmm.
I knew him. Well, he lived up there on Harbor Avenue. And he had a boat livery. Now, the boat livery was down across the street on what now the Laudit property. And I worked at the bakery and used to deliver bread to Mrs. Enoy. And Mrs. Enoy used to make sandwiches. And people would rent a boat and would buy sandwiches from her, and they'd go out fishing all day. And the thing that got me to thinking about it was, I don't know, somehow or another I got to thinking about delivering bread up to that place to her. Now that house is gone. I think Jim Gray is going to build an office there,
mm-hmm.
I believe. But anyway, then I got to thinking, what a difference in the way they used to do this. Now, they had several boat liveries, and I still have up the river and marinas and so on. But today, if a fellow's going to go fishing or a party's going to go fishing, they hook their boat on the trailer and hook the trailer on back end of the car, and they have a motor on it, and they go down and launch it at one of the boat launching ramps that are municipally owned in most cases, and they can go fishing all day, and they don't have to row or anything else. But they used to rent these boats from... Well, I was thinking particularly of Al Enoy. There were different ones. Cross had a boat livery up the river, and there were several other ones. But we talk about the good old days and the looking back and all that. Heck, there's nothing to it. If today, as I say, if they want to go fishing, they want to go fishing for a day. They got a boat that's worth, two, three, four, five, six, $7,000 maybe, that they just hook on the back of their trailer and take it down there, and they go
off and running.
And they're off and running. And this noon, Claude Verdine talked to the Kiwanis Club about the fishing industry. And that made me think of this. And by the way, Claude should be telling this story instead of me, because he knew much, much more about the waterfront and the boats than I do. Because I got down to the docks once in a while with the horse and wagon and delivering bread and so on and so forth. And I used to take passengers from the boat out in the country with the horse and buggy and stuff like that. But Claude's livelihood was down there, and he know all about the boats and the traffic and everything else. But getting back to this fishing, of course, as Claude was talking today, he gave a pretty good history of the fishing industry in Grand Haven, and there were quite a few fish tugs and fishermen that made their livelihood by fishing,
mm-hmm.
and that was mostly for whitefish and chubs and
they do lake trout then too.
Yeah, and some lake trout too. Yes, and then of course they brought in and it was sold. But I'm thinking mostly of the sport fishermen, the fellow that went out with the fish pole and the lunch and the.
Well, did they do much of that then? sport fishing?
Yes, but it was entirely different. Yeah. There wasn't
nobody they didn't have outboard motors even, did
no,
they?
No, they rowed their boats. It wasn't an outboard motor.
How could you row your boat in that river? It seemed like you'd have to have an awful time trying to get back.
You were rowing against the stream part of the time, but they had to have a strong back.
I bet they didn't row too far, did they, John?
Well, no, I don't imagine they did. There was, I suppose, the fisherman that rented the boat from Al Enoy's place down there would probably go out the end of the pier or maybe into the lake a little
really?
Bit.
Do you think they'd go that far?
Oh, yes, if it was calm. They were just wooden rowboats.
Yeah.
It was nothing fancy.
No,
it was a pair of oars and strong arm. That's all there was to it. Well, they probably went in the Sag or may have gone into Spring Lake, but if they were going to fish in Spring Lake, most likely they rented a boat from Hammond over there.
Yeah.
Hammond had a boat livery over there, and so they didn't have to row so far. But that was quite a business. They didn't have a method of hauling their boat or anything else. You rented it as close to where you wanted to go fishing as possible.
That's pretty good that you could get, because today if you go with the charter boats or so, they'll prepare box lunches for you.
Right.
But it's just like Mrs. Enoy used to do. She'd prepare sandwiches
for
them.
That's right. Well, it's in
what she'd charge for that sandwich, do you suppose?
I suppose a dime. they weren't much, maybe
a
quarter.
What would you get for a loaf of bread then, John?
Well, I had two sizes of bread. We used to deliver, we sell 5-cent loaf and a 10-cent loaf.
Really?
Charlie Tryon used to come into the bakery and he said, "Bread is the staff of life." He says, "I want a 5-cent staff or a 10-cent staff." Always remembered him that way. He was a plumber here in town. He's quite a guy.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's the way the fishing business went. Then I got to thinking of what a change in the waterfront here. And, of course, on the north side of the river were the fish shanties where the commercial fishermen came in and strung their nets over there where the fountain is, and down below it, of course.
Now that's what Chuck Bogalski blew up one year,
that's
isn't it?
Right. Well, they burned them up on 4th of July. Some of them were ready to be torn down.
Yeah.
They burned them, made quite a spectacular fire. But some of them lived over there.
Yeah. Oh, did they?
Oh, yes. There were some cottages there where they would live during the summer. But these fish shanties where they kept their nets and all of that stuff in there, of course, they began to get old and depreciated. And, of course, the fishing business went the way of all flesh, so that settled that and they farmed down. But then I was thinking of, I mentioned the barn a little while ago. That was the dance hall there. Nat Robbins took one of the warehouses that was over on the island and moved it up there and made a dance hall out of it. Intended to use it for a dance hall. It was a big warehouse.
And he moved that over here?
Moved it up here on scows. And it set right over there where the Loudoun Foundation's park is and where the three little stores are.
Oh, yeah.
And then he ran a barn, a dance hall in the barn, and he had named bands.
He did?
Like
the ones that used to come at Fruitport, you mean?
Yes.
Is that right?
Lawrence Welk and, can't think of a lot of the other ones.
Yeah.
Well,
and those are before my day.
That was quite a thing. And a fellow by the name of Vic Peter Lawrence ran it. And then later,
could they make any money at that?
I don't think he ever made any money at it. But Robbins was pretty well fixed, and he got quite a kick out of it.
How big of a dance floor would you guess?
It was a big one.
Was it?
Yeah, maybe 150 feet, 100
really?
Feet long and 50 feet wide or better.
Wow.
And he used it for a while for a warehouse. I believe that he moved it up there intending to use it for a warehouse first.
Oh.
And then he...
What did he do? Why did he want a warehouse?
Well, he was in the coal and building material business, lime and cement and so on and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
I think that he used it first for a warehouse and then got the notion that it would make a good dance hall, so he changed it. I may have this backward, that he had it for the barn, for the dance hall first, but I don't think so. I think it was the warehouse first. And then he remodeled it into a dance floor. And as I say, he had the big bands here. Peter Lawless would play, had an orchestra, and they'd play during the week. And then on special occasions, like Lawrence Welk, and fellow that has the polka band,
Frankie Yankovic.
Frankie Yankovic, and other big bands, mm-hmm. like that, that played in Chicago and all around.
What would they do? Come over on a boat?
Well, some of them came over with a van, like they do now.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them came over on the boats, and that was quite a hot spot. It was a very well-run place.
Was it?
Yes, it was. There was no...
Nobody misbehaved.
No, that was it was a good place to go. And,
mm-hmm.
All right. Well, then Robbins got sick of it, and he sold it to Joe Davis. And Joe Davis ran a dance hall there for a while, and he changed it to a skating rink.
Oh.
He built it up. He had the corners built up the bunker so that you go around the corners fast.
Oh, is that right?
You wouldn't slide. And each of the four corners was sloped up and made kind of a bowl out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Joe ran it there for quite a number of years, and then I believe it was 1946 it burned down. And what a fire that made.
Oh, how about that, all that old wood?
Yeah. So,
how did it ever start? Did anybody ever know how that started?
Yes, it started from a light fixture.
It did?
Yeah, they had neon lights there, and it started in the afternoon about 4 o'clock or 4:30, something like that. And they had a little fire. You see, they insulated it with corrugated paper with aluminum foil over it.
Oh.
And that was the insulation, and also was the sheeting on the inside of it. And this corrugated paper caught fire, and they tried to put it out with a fire extinguisher, and it got away from and burned up. And when it got started, there was no stopping to it.
Is that right?
No, absolutely.
Were you a fireman then?
I was a fireman then and helped fight it, yeah.
You didn't drive the truck, though?
No, I didn't drive the truck.
Run the siren?
No, I didn't run the siren that time either. I held the hose for that time. Really earned our money there.
Is that right?
But then, of course, after that was done with, Davis never could quite get up the courage or the money to rebuild it. So
well, wasn't it insured, John?
Yes. We paid him $32,000. I'll never forget that. We had just insured the building about a month ahead of that.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. He hadn't even paid the premium. I remember Joe Davis... Well, he was good pay. It wasn't a case of not paying. It just and the time wasn't up. I remember I was holding the hose, and he came up to me, and he was almost sweating blood. He says, "Am I all right? Am I insured? I haven't paid you yet." I said, "You are all right, and you will get paid," and he did.
But that wasn't enough for him to rebuild, huh?
No. Stuff had gone up. And, of course, this was an old building, and, of course, he couldn't build another old building. He had to build a new
one. That's right.
Oh, and so he ran an outdoor skating rink there for a while. But that didn't work out too well.
Didn't
every
take off,
No,
huh?
Every spring he had to re-coat the floor.
Oh, I suppose.
And, it didn't work out. So then he sold it to Baltz, and Baltz never did much with it either.
Well, is that still a skating rink then?
Yeah, it was still a skating rink. And he had plans of building on it, but he never did. Well, that's the history of that. Then, of course, the Laudit Foundation came along and bought it, and you know what is down there now. And then they bought the rest of the property down there, along there, and they've got something like $1.5 million in it, and made a beautiful, beautiful park out of it.
Pretty, isn't it?
It certainly is. It's probably one of the finest river fronts in the state. I think the Laudit Foundation had plans for something else that didn't work out, and so they, rather than leave it set there raw and unfinished, made a beautiful park out of it and built steel sheet piling all the way for four blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're offering it to the city for, what is, $500,000?
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly hope that the city folks, the citizens, can see their way clear to afford to buy it. It's going to be costly, and it's going to cost a little money to keep it up. But it's like your front lawn around your house. It enhances the value of your property.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a little work to keep it up. You've got to cut it,
right,
fertilize it, and everything else. But without it, your house would look pretty shabby.
Well, our city has a lot of nice parks.
Yes,
so we've got it. We've got the right department to handle it.
Yeah.
They do such a good job throughout the city.
We have, in my estimation, a beautiful, beautiful city and a beautiful place to live. And I would very much like to see them be able to put this across,
mm-hmm,
and build a beautiful, keep it up. It's,
mm-hmm,
it's a beautiful entrance to the city.
Was the city always that interested in parks, John? Did Grand Haven always have parks?
Yes.
Were people concerned
to
make sure we had good park areas?
Yes. Well, we didn't have as many of them, and there were some of these, as I recall, that were, well, they were parks, but they weren't kept up.
They were not, huh?
But we've got some pretty nice parks. Of course, Central Park was always a beautiful place.
Yes. Was that always taken care of, too?
That was always taken care of.
Why did that get saved right in the middle there? It seems to me that's so close to downtown, it's amazing that always stayed there.
That always did, and I presume it always will, and I would awfully hate to see it changed to anything else.
Oh,
of course, you know that was a cemetery once.
Oh, was it?
When the city of Grand Haven was first platted, the city limits were 4th Street.
City limits?
Mm-hmm. The city plat, the original plat of the city, went to 4th Street.
Well, where'd it run from then? What? From
well, it went forth down to the river and up to Howard Street, I believe.
Yeah, then what about the other way?
The river.
Oh, that's the river there, too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You mean that was the whole city?
It was the city, originally.
Well, how'd they take in the rest? Did they have to annex?
Keep going. Every new addition is, there's Boltwood's addition and Coral's addition, Maris' addition, Vanderveen Slayton's addition. And
well, did they keep annexing?
Keep annexing that to the city.
Boy.
And so the Central Park at one time was the cemetery, and when they saw that the city was growing and that was not going to be big enough for a cemetery, and they had foresight enough to see that before it got filled, they removed the graves and bought the Lake Forest Cemetery, which is a beautiful cemetery.
Yes, it is.
And comes under the park and cemetery board.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I remember Pure Marquette Park down there on 4th Street. That was just just four corners there.
That's Pure Marquette Park.
Right across the Pure Marquette Depot, or just
Ceno
Park. And then there's Bolt Park out on the Beechtree Road and Bernard Avenue. That's where the old Beechtree School used to stand. When they tore that school down or moved it, they moved it across the street and made a house out of it. They dedicated that to John J. Bolt, who was a school teacher in the Bolt School.
Oh.
And so you've got a nice little park there.
Mm-hmm.
And we've always had a little park there on the corner of Howard and Fifth Street, which has been a
mm-hmm.
cute little park and a nice spot.
Did they have playground equipment in any of those parks in those days, too, John?
No.
Did they do anything for kids at all?
No.
They
no.
didn't?
Huh? No. Kids played out in the street. As kids, I think of that often.
What did you play?
Run.
Kick the can?
Kick the can and Mommy Peg and marbles, Migs, and the other day, what did I see? A picture in one of the cartoons. Ollie, Ollie, Oxen Free. forgotten just what it was, but you had to hide or something, or blind the kid be blindfolded, and then everybody went and hid somewhere, and you had to find them. And
oh, yeah.
If you couldn't find them, and, or if you got one or two of them, you couldn't find the rest of them, then you'd holler, Ollie, Ollie, oxen free, and then the rest of them would come in. And I've forgotten what the game was.
Uh-huh.
And you played caddy. Caddy was a piece of broomstick sharpened on both ends like a lead pencil, probably 3 inches long. And you had a wooden paddle, piece of box board, and you whittled a handle on the end of it, and you would hit that caddy like that on the end, and of course it'd flip up, and then you'd bat it with the paddle, and then give a fellow, or give boys and girls could play that together, so many steps to get to where the caddy was.
Oh.
And if they made it, all right. If they didn't, why, then they had to bat it.
What about the outdoor sports? Were they very popular then, John? Did they do much baseball?
Well, we had a baseball park out where the hospital is, and we had, I would say this was in the early 1900s, we had a real good semi-professional baseball team here.
Did you really?
Grand Haven Athletics. And where the hospital is now was the baseball park. And these fellows, I say, were semi-professionals.
Well, how did they ever get developed to that level? Was there a good coach here or something that got this going, or huh?
I couldn't tell you. I was not much of a baseball fan. I remember going out there and seeing some of the games as a kid. That was quite a ways to walk.
Mm-hmm.
Or we drive out with a horse and buggy, or ride a saddle horse out there. But that was quite a spot. Football, of course, was high school football. There weren't any professional football teams in those days, as I remember it.
But they did play the outdoor sports then.
Oh, yeah.
Football and baseball.
And the kids played baseball out in the middle of the street.
I suppose.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
Or they had baseball fields where the kids had
Sandlot.
Sandlot baseball, sure. It was quite a deal. The kids found plenty to do. They were always busy, sure.
Were there sliding hills around here? Did they do much sliding in the winter?
Yes, they did. They did. Third Street Hill right over here was a good sliding place. Second Street Hill, of course, was the Plank Road Hill, as they call it, or Piety Hill. That's where they slid with the bobsleds. That was the prime sliding place.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
How big of bobsleds did they use? Did they have long ones with the two sets of runners?
That's right. Two sets of bobs on. They'd hold 20 people, 20 kids,
those
easy.
Those things go like the wind, too,
and,
don't they?
Yeah, they would go from the top of the hill. The hill was steeper than it is now.
Was it?
Oh, yes. When they paved that hill, they cut it down.
Oh.
And it was much, much steeper. And the city used to let the kids use the fire hydrant to get water.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean ice that hill?
And they'd ice that hill.
Oh.
And you could hear that, those bobs on that ice for on a clear night halfway around the town.
They went awful fast,
and they would go past Washington Street. The city hired a watchman because the railroad, the Interurban, went down Washington Street,
right.
And they would stop the Interurban if a bob were coming. They had a watchman there.
Didn't they ever have any accidents or anything with those?
Yes, they had a few.
They go so fast.
They had a few.
If you're icing a hill like that.
Joe Kelly, I saw in the paper the other day that he just passed away. Now, he would be a kid of somewhere near 70 years old, and he got hurt quite badly and was always crippled.
Really?
Yeah.
From a bobsled accident?
From a bobsled accident. I don't recall any one ever having been killed on that road.
How would you get those things back up there?
Pull them.
Oh.
If you wanted to ride down, you pulled up. That was all there was to it. You either pulled up, and you got out in the afternoon and helped ice the hill, too, or you didn't
right?
slide. These kids kept a pretty good record of that.
They knew who did what.
Life. They knew who was loafing and who was working.
No free ride in that game. Huh,
they had, there were quite a few people that lived up on the hill there that had nice bobsleds.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them had a rod across the front to steer it, and some of them had a big iron wheel.
Oh, yeah.
But they have about 20, 30 feet of rope on it, and you can get 15, 20 kids pulling it. And they'd pull, they used to go down to...
John, our time is over.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, maybe we should pick that up again next time. I'd like to talk some more about that. That sounds like fun to me.
It was.
But we really have to run now.
Okay, well, let's run.
Thank you so much for
being here today. It's been a pleasure recalling
you. Good. We'll look for you again next month, John, in the program.
Lord willing, I'll try and be here.
Real good. Our guest has been John Van Skelvin.
You are listening to Memories of the Past, brought to you by the Van Zantwick Memorial Chapel, 620 Washington, serving Western Michigan for over 50 years.